Hi, this is Alan from the Linux League Tech Show. See, I told you I was going to screw this up. Take two. Hi, this is Alan from the Linux League Tech Show, live at the Ohio Linux Fest 2009, and you're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. See, I made it right that time.
Welcome back to Linux in the Ham Shack. My name is Richard, KB5JBV, down here with acetylsalicylic acid damage. And I think I probably need to turn it over to the guy in the pine forest up there so he can introduce himself. Say hello to everybody, Russ.
Hello, everybody. This is Russ. I'm up here in the pine forest. I'm hepped up on Tylenol, and I'm ready to go. I got a new mobile rig, so I'm mobile again. Things are happening. Things are good. So how's it going down there?
Life has just been so peachy. If it was any better, I would have to pay somebody for it. Okay, that was a lie. Actually, things have been going pretty well. Work has slowed down. Well, that's in the other room. I'm sorry. Let me say hello to everybody in the chat room while I'm thinking about it, because there was a comment in there, and my response is, that's in the other room. We'd like to welcome, the Ustream bot. Welcome, Ustream bot. Cheryl and Bill, K9WKA, AB9MS. I think he said he wanted laser. Anyway, K6FPV, K8PEZ, KC2TPY, KC8BEW, KC8TAD, KD8HWG, Kent V4KEH, KO4RB, N3JIM, N4QLB1, Teen Radio Live, that's Paul out there, and the two unidentified Ustreamers out there, 36951 and 78837. Now, where I was. Oh, yes. My company has quit trying to kill me. I've had plenty of time to rest and recuperate. We're currently halfway through season 8 of Smallville, and life is just so peachy that I can't hardly stand it. So now I should probably shut up and let Russ talk a few minutes, because he starts feeling left out if I don't.
No, not really. I could let you talk, you know, but then everybody would think you were doing two shows, I guess. I don't know. Well, hopefully we'll get some input on what topics we should talk about from the chat room. We've got plenty of great hams out there, and almost everybody's got a call sign this week. I'm really happy about that. We can figure out who everybody is, except for those two down there at the bottom, but we won't worry about them.
Yeah, because if y'all don't give us something to talk about, you're going to have to hear about my adventures with a Dell Latitude CPT laptop.
Well, when I was in Baltimore, just as an aside, I went down to Ham Radio Outlet, because there's one in Virginia, and I actually wanted to see what a Ham Radio Outlet looked like, so I went down there, and that's one of those stores that I could walk in and never walk out of if I'm not careful. I did manage to walk out with some money, but I also brought home a bunch of ham radio gear that I had to figure out how to pack in my luggage on the way home. We did manage to squeak in about 3 pounds underweight, so that wasn't too bad. But anyway, one of the things I picked up was a Yaesu FT7900R, which is a dual-band mobile rig, and I haven't been mobile in quite a while, ham radio speaking, and I just put that in the truck tonight. Got my Larson dual-bander mag-mounted up on the roof. Managed to find a couple of knockouts in the body of the truck, so I didn't have to poke any holes in anything. and got that hooked up, and it is working great. Nice to actually have some mobile stuff again. So what have you been doing ham radio-wise lately, now that work's not trying to put you on the rack and stretch you out till you keel over?
Dustin.
Yeah, gotta keep...
Actually, that's what that Dell laptop was all about, was me trying to get things going. I don't know if I mentioned it here or not, but I did purchase a TS-50 and some wire and a couple of antennas down at Belton. Haven't had an opportunity to run them yet, of course. All the appropriate grommets are poked out in that truck, so all I have to do is get the time to get out there and put all the connectors on and run the stuff. But I'm doing my best, y'all. I'm doing my best. I've been neglecting my amateur radio hobby, so I'm going to try and jump on it and not neglect it so much.
I'm in the same boat as you in neglecting the hobby, and now I'm kind of overcompensating, but that's okay. I'm enjoying my overcompensation.
Well, I'm trying to get myself motivated. Now, you know, when you do two, well, a ham-related podcast, ham radio-related podcast, and a pseudo-ham related Yes, I was speaking Japanese. No, Richard has not been drinking Red Bull. This is Richard without his back pain medicine. That's why I'm more mellow most of the time. But let us try again. I don't know where the hell it was. I've completely lost it, y'all. I've been kind of neglectful. And, you know, when you do one show and one pseudo show about amateur radio and that kind of stuff, you tend to wear out as many subjects as you could possibly think of to wear out as often as possible. So a lot of times it's kind of difficult to make yourself sit down and actually do something. But I was lamenting on the other show that I haven't worked Route 66 in 2 years, and I never missed Route 66. It's one of my favorite events. And 2 years in a row, 2 years in a row. I've decided to get away from all the folks that have been sucking the joy out of amateur radio for me and try and spend more time with the radio on. So who knows? You may run into me on the air.
We need to set up a schedule so I can try and get in touch with you like on 80 meters at night. We should be able to pull 80 meters without any problem.
That is true. We might even be able to work 40 early in the day. It normally craps out 11 or 12, but early in the day, it may work.
I heard last night that basically the entire Western Hemisphere was wide open on 60 meters.
Really? Well, I got one radio around here that'll do 60 meters, and it's over there on the other side of the room.
Well, I've got one that can do 60 meters if I pop a little surface-mounted resistor off one of the boards, which I plan on doing here pretty quick.
Well, I can modify some of these to do it. But this one came out of the box. Not this one I'm holding, but the one I'm talking about came out of the box. And that's one of the reasons I bought it, because it was already 60 meter ready.
All right. See, well, what do you think about hitting some feedback?
See, Russ is laughing because I got like the sugar rush thing going on, and he doesn't see that a lot. Okay, feedback. Let's get on to some feedback. Well, I only have one, and I think Russ has 17, and I guess I let him go first. Go ahead, Russ.
No, I only have one, too, and I don't want to – well, I've got the one you have, and I want you to do that because I want to hit the other stuff I have, which isn't feedback, but it's important. So,
I see how it is. See, last week he told me he was ready.
No, and I am ready. I just ready. I don't want to steal your one feedback.
Japanese! Okay. Ahem. Our first piece of feedback comes from John. EI7IG. Thanks for writing in, John. Small comment, guys. You don't need Kernel AX25 support. In the kernel, use Zastar. I know this. That's the experiment I've been doing. Like you did in KISS mode. You were talking directly to the TNC. No need for, yeah, I know. No need for the AX25 support in kernel. I like the comment about watching the car in the driveway. However, that's not the whole story. We use it for MCOM events to keep everyone updated as to what's going on using bulletins. It keeps the voice channel clear for more important traffic. Also, we can, of course, see where people are and send them messages directly if required. Or if the coverage of the data network is greater than the voice network. We also have a few weather stations, which are using APRS, to send data out. Cheers, DE John, EI7IG. Thank you, John. And that's a misconception a lot of folks get when I talk about APRS. Number one is that I think it's totally useless. Who are you talking to?
I actually messed you up. All right.
I thought you was having a freakout, dude.
No, I was
smoking some resistors or something.
No, I was making it look like I was saying what you were talking.
Holy cow. Oh, this is going to be, yeah, let's see if the bleep happens on this. No, I can't say it because Paul's in the chat room. Oh, all right. I'm going to close the lid on you. That's my thing. All right. Well, thank you, John. See, that's where a lot of folks get a misconception when they hear me talking about APRS. Yes, I really have no use for APRS myself. However, I know it is a good asset tracking tool for public service events, and in the case of a real MCOM emergency, it would also be. As far as messaging, yeah, okay, I'm iffy on that because a lot of the guys that I know that are so gung-ho over APRS do not have a screen where they can see the messages when they get them. Therefore, the direct messaging situation, I really don't see that aspect of it. But the fact of the matter is, in that case, you'd have to have a laptop or something where you could receive the messages, be able to see them. And in most cases, that means a laptop or something like that. There are a couple of devices where you can see the messages, even though you don't have a laptop or something. And in that case, there are much better protocols to use for that. D-Star Digital, actual full-blown AX25 packet. But, yeah, John, thank you for that information. Yes, I didn't realize until after I had got in there and started running it that I was running in KISS mode. So there wasn't any need for me to have the AX25 in the kernel because it's built into the TNC and in KISS mode. The software is telling it what to do.
Well, I was glad to see John's email because it's nice to see that there actually may in fact be some practical uses for APRS since, Richard, you kind of have a down on it view of things. And I, of course, haven't played with APRS at all, so I can't say that I like it or dislike it. But one of these days I'm going to try it just so I can see if I hate it or not, too. But at least we know some people are actually getting some actual benefit out of it other than low-jacking their cars and making sure that their garage door hasn't been opened. But that's about all I got out of that. I think you nailed it pretty good.
Well, that's like I was saying before we got started. It doesn't matter what I think about it. What matters is what you think about it. We will bring you the information, try and get you up to speed. I can offer my opinions, but that's what they are, is opinions. And until you go check it out yourself, you're not going to know whether it's something that's right for you or not. But I do know that I'm not the only one that feels that way. Okay, well, that pretty much wraps up our giant feedback spectacular. It's not like the other show. We did almost over half hour on feedback on that one. Y'all are slacking. So send those feedbacks in. You can send them to Russ at K5TUX@BlackSparrowMedia.com. That's where all the hate mail goes. Or you can send the rest of it to KB5JBV@BlackSparrowMedia.com. That's where all the compliments, kudos, gift certificates, whatever you want to send those my way. I will take care of them. Or you can just leave some comments on the site. Go leave some at iTunes, whatever. So now I'm going to unclip that leash on Russ again. Let him run wild. Go ahead and run wild, Russ.
I don't have any more feedback. However, I do have a couple of things to mention. The first is we got a Google alert, or I got one, that we got a mention on a blog. And this is Tim's blog, KI6BGE. And he had a post on October 29th where he talked about some other stuff that he was doing. But he also said, don't forget to listen to Resonant Frequency. Not sure what that is. And then Linux in the Ham Shack.
That's that show with that big scary guy.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay. and Solder Smoke for some great information and entertainment. So I want to thank Tim, KI6BGE, for posting that. And I think I may have shot myself in the foot a little bit when I said, when I got down on my knees on the last episode and begged for donations, because it turns out we got a couple. And that's a great thing. The only thing is, I said I was going to match them. Well, I didn't expect donations to come in quite as large as the one we got today. Like I said, this is a good thing. Absolutely a good thing. We mentioned on the last podcast that Paul sent us a donation during our podcast, episode 24. And not long after episode 25 came out, a good friend and long time listener of the program, Alex, and again, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he sent us a sizable donation, and I, of course, went and matched it as soon as it came in. So if you go to the website, you'll see how far along we've gotten in just a day. So that's fantastic. I looked at the Hamvention website today and found out that we have to have our money by, I believe it's the first part of February, in order to get a good spot in the vendor space. So we've got plenty of time left, and I want to just thank Alex and Paul and everybody else who's donated, and I've been matching funds as they come in. So please keep those donations coming. Even if they're slow, small, and steady, we'll definitely get there by early February 2010, and we'll have our place at the Dayton Hamvention. So thanks again, Alex, Paul, and everybody else.
Oh, yes. That is currently tied for the biggest donation to come in to any of the Black Sparrow Media shows at this time. And I'm glad that he has enough faith in us and confidence in us to drop a donation like that on us, because we really do appreciate it. And we are trying like crazy to get out there to Dayton one way or the other. I'm not going to say that I'll kill somebody, but if we make it, I might change my mind on that, because some people, nah, I ain't going to say that either. You've heard me say that before. But anyway, yes, Alex is a developer, and I wish I had thought about it before Russ started talking, and I could tell you he developed some of the software that we've talked about in the past. So thank you, Alex, and let me also say thank you to Paul over at Teen Radio Live, because Paul's donation came in right before we finished recording last time. He's just a teenager, y'all, and in school, and he was able to send in a donation. So how's that for shaming y'all?
I can feel our listeners' arms twisting from over here. So,
well, you know, you got to do something. And I understand, you know, don't get me wrong, y'all. I'm not being a jerk about it and stuff. I understand. Times are hard all the way around. We're feeling it here just like everybody else is. But if you can't afford to send a small donation this way, please send it this way, because we will use it to best advantage to get the word out about the show and amateur radio in particular.
I guess we'll move on to the next thing, if that's all there is for segment one.
Do we have a next thing?
We may go with the roundtable thing, so.
Okay, quit talking. Play some music.
All right, I'm doing it. Here, mouth off, music on.
Little pearls of wisdom that tumble from the light can make us laugh until we cry, because we know that they are right. Within the strangest people, truth can find the strangest home. So meet me in the village where all the idiots go. Bring on the clowns, the jokers, and the fools. I've had the time of my life and the life of my time in the company of fools. Na 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 na
Okay, and we're back. We decided to do something a little bit different and get some of the some of our regular chat room participants in here to talk with us. We're going to talk about radios for a little while. And since my memory is about, well, it's about that long, I'm going to turn it over to Russ to make the introductions. Take it away, Russ.
Okay, well, hopefully I can remember everybody who's in here. I'm going to probably start with the end and go back towards the beginning. The last person we had connect is Kent, VE4KEH. And let's make sure. Ah, he's still there. Go ahead and give me another good evening, Kent. I heard you, but I think I walked over you.
Good evening, guys, and thanks for having me on your wonderful show.
Well, thanks for calling in. Let me go down the list here. We have Paul, who doesn't have a call sign yet, but it's coming up soon. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm doing very good, thank you.
Very good. Paul is from Teen Radio Journey. We interviewed him a few episodes back, so it's good to have you here. We also have Matt, KC8BEW.
Howdy, everybody, from Muskingum County in Ohio.
Good to have you here, Matt. Thanks for calling in and joining our little impromptu roundtable for the evening. And last but not least, we have Jim, N3JIM.
And in spite of the N3, I'm actually from Sacramento, California.
Well, we won't hold that against you. Anyway, so there's our roundtable participants for the evening, and we'll go ahead and let Richard start us off here.
What happened to Bill? Where's Bill? Bill, why aren't you in here? Boy, I'm going to have cut your pay. Okay. Anyway, we're in here, and we got some folks, and things are happening. And since we've got you guys on here, I guess the best place for us to start out is, you know, find out which flavors of your favorite operating system you're using, and find out how that's working out for you as far as amateur radio is concerned. Since the only name that comes to mind is Jim, we'll start with Jim. Jim, go ahead and what operating system or flavor of operating system are you running over at your place?
Well, I'm running Mac OS X on the laptop, and I use FreeBSD on all my workstations and servers at work. I don't actually have any ham radio software yet because I've only got a little handheld VX3, and I haven't got anything hooked up to it computer-wise yet. So actually, I'm trying to get some ideas.
Well, there you go. That's something you could turn that into an APRS tracker or packet radio or all kinds of stuff. And I found out from a fellow here locally that runs Mac that Zastar will run on the Mac operating system also. He's running it up there where he's at. But good. We need to get you on some Linux, though. That FreeBSD, well, it's just as good, but we don't want to tell anybody about it. It's my understanding in some cases it's better.
I know from a developer standpoint, they tend to like the BSDs because the development tools and the libraries are a little more well-developed than they are from Linux side, because BSD and Unix have been around longer. I'll go ahead, since you can only remember Jim, and I've actually got the names written down here, we'll go ahead and ask Matt out there in Ohio.
Don't call him Matt.
Don't call him Matt?
No, don't call him Paul either. Call him the other guy.
Oh, the other guy. Okay. So what are you using? So what are you using, Matt?
Let's see. I am running, I just cleared out one because I had a makeup computer for somebody. I had SUSE 10 on it, I believe, open SUSE 10, and Ubuntu Dapper. And right now I'm on the laptop. We have XP, which I'm currently running at the moment because I'm having issues with both SUSE and Mint, but I think it's some partitioning stuff. I need to give them some more room, so I'm going to cut back the XP, and I think just to drop open SUSE, and I know you'll like this, Russ, go all Mint, so that's going to be the next step on there. It was giving me some fits, so and when it's set up and everything, it didn't want to go to the partition I wanted to anyway, so I'm just going to make it, I'm just going to get in there, enlarge it, and that should take care of my issue. So, but yeah, you turned me on the man. After I got looking at it, I thought it looked pretty cool, so I think that's where I'm going to go.
Well, that sounds good. Of course, once I got settled in with Mint, I got to a machine like my work one that I was talking about earlier, where I can't actually install it. So Mint's not the end-all be-all, and as long as you're using Linux or something open source, that's good. Mint's good, too. You know, we still donate to the Mint project, and hopefully they'll get some of these things taken care of. So what about you, Paul? What are you using right now?
On my main computer, I use Windows XP. And then on a computer I have sitting next to that, which I'm hoping to turn into a radio control / programming computer when I get my license, that's running Ubuntu 9.10, and then in the basement I have a Linux file server that's running Ubuntu 5.04.
Well, quite a mix there. That's good. And I heard, it was just Matt we were talking about. You said you were running Ubuntu Dapper?
Oh, yeah. It's a...
Dude, I started on Dapper. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
This was an old hard drive I pulled out.
Ah.
All right, we've got one more. Kent, so what's on your computers these days?
Well, up until about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was running Debian testing on both my desktop and my laptop. But the sort of rolling release nature of Debian testing, not Debian Squeeze. Currently, it's Squeeze, but the testing sort of evolves continually, even after Squeeze goes stable. And I think the updates that were starting to kill, especially my laptop. I would have errors that would pop up every now and then, and eventually I lost everything on my desktop, including the upper and lower panel, which makes the computer a little bit harder to use. And then finally on my desktop, I lost the SSH server. So about 2 weeks ago, I was at the Ontario GNU Linux Fest, and there was a presentation there showing some actually noob-friendly distributions, and Linux Mint was one of the ones that was mentioned, so I thought I'd throw that on my laptop. And because my desktop is a little bit older, it's a Pentium 3, I decided to go with Crunchbang. My Mint installation is going well. I haven't had any difficulties with it yet on the laptop. In fact, I'm using it right now to watch the show and chime in the chat room. I'm just finishing up installing Crunchbang. I just have a few networking issues right now, and then I want to get everything, all the servers going on it as well.
All right. It's interesting to hear somebody who's using Crunchbang. I know we reviewed it a while back, and some of us... Okay, what the...
Oh, my God, there's geese in Russell's shack.
It was
there's
a geese. Sounded like a cow or something.
Oh, I said that word.
Good. Now I got to find out something to bleep in all the chatter. That's wonderful. I'm so happy. Anyway, all right, Richard, you go for it. You take us on to the next thing.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know how to top that. Oh, goodness. Jim, we were talking about that radio. Have you thought about running PAC?
Thank you. Back to me now?
Yeah. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I was too busy laughing about the goose.
That's goose and ham jack. Woohoo! Goose and it ain't no dapper duck. That's for sure. It's a goofy goose. All right, anyway. All seriousness aside now. Jim? Have you thought about running digital modes on it, that radio that you have?
I thought about running packet or something, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of TNCs out there that are available still, and most of them will run under Zastar and some of the other software and stuff. You know, a lot of folks want to go run out and buy one brand new, but there's a whole lot of that stuff available on the secondary market for pretty doggone cheap. And if you go with one of the brands that were big in were big brands when they first came out, and you find them at the ham fest and stuff, you can normally pick them up pretty cheap. In fact, I've got a PK232 MBX, which was made by Advanced Electronics Applications, which was one of the biggest. Oh, my God. There's more geese.
The goose is back.
And the fact
look out. Is,
the last one I saw out at Hamfest, even though I paid close to $300 for mine, the last one I saw at a Hamfest was about $40.
At Hamfest, I was out here locally. When I say low, we'll put in Ohio. It was $40 for a KPC3. And at the same Hamfest, probably about a year earlier, one of the members of my club picked one up for $5. The guy's like, "Oh, it's not working. It's you know, nothing more than a paperweight." So I said, "Okay, I'll give you $5 for it." Did a hard reset, worked fine until I got hit by lightning. So well, that's just working active on Digi until then.
Yeah, that's the sad part nowadays is the fact that a lot of these guys have got TNCs and they really don't know a whole lot about them. And you can definitely find some good deals at these Hamfests and stuff. In fact, we were talking about Belton a couple episodes back on a previous trip to Belton. We bought all of these. My father couldn't make them work, and he is a packet guy. But I went over there and tested all of them, got them working for him, and he still couldn't make them work. So I now have them over here, and I don't think we paid more than $5 or $10 for any of these when we purchased them down there.
What's that one on the bottom? Is that that's an MFJ, right?
And I'm sorry for you folks that are not on the video and watching the video after the fact, because this is an MFJ 1278B. This is an all-mode controller dual port. Looks like he's been working on it from back here. But it is a dual port TNC. You run VHF and UHF simultaneously through it. In fact, there's a couple of those in here. The two that were on the top of the box are PK-232s, which is like the one I've got running over there on the shelf. They ain't heavy by themselves, but you get a few of them, they're kind of weighty. Anyway, the reason I collect those up is they have... Most of them nowadays that you run across have a PacTor 1 chip in them. And if I ever decide to go back to HF PacTor, I want to be ready.
That 1278B is the one I think I bought way back when that I was running my HTX 202 out of. And I know it's down in storage. You're going to make me go down there and find out what I got. I bet I'm going to have that thing on the air again. That's really sad. The last time I used that was in the mid-90s.
Well, this one right here. This is not the one because it's over on the shelf over yonder, but one just like this one is the one I started on, which is a PK-88.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to quit powdering your head while we're talking.
Not powdering my head.
Trying to get the shine down.
Got a couple of stray hairs here, you know. I got to look good for the camera, right? You know,
fix the eyebrows and all that kind of stuff. That's the rest I know. Well, any of you other guys considered working digital or working digital at this time? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're running it on Windows or not. You know, it's one of those whatever works best kind of things.
Don't all speak at once.
Okay. Yeah, I've been using the FL Digi for the last year or so.
On Windows or on Linux?
Oh, no, on Linux.
I just started using FL Digi myself, and I'm using it under Windows, so it works well both ways.
Yeah, in fact,
it seems to, in comparison with some of the other Windows packages available from the Yahoo group, it seems that it's a little bit harder to set up under Windows. But you move to Linux, and it's almost like it works right out of the box.
Well, that's how it's supposed to work.
Right out of the repository, just fine.
Yep.
Well, there you go. And that's one of the things that drew me to it is because it was pretty similar. I can't remember what I was using on the other operating system, but it was very similar to the one I had been using on Windows before I quit using Windows for my radio machine. And I've had nothing but good luck with it. And in fact, we were talking here a while back around field day. I ran into a guy who's doing some developing on FL Digi on his own, and hope to get back with him about that. But let me tell you, I can't say enough good things about FL Digi.
Well, we got we're just setting up a station in elementary school here locally. And right now we're going to have 15 kids, and it's just a small thing at the moment.
but we're going to be getting into the digital modes, and I'm going to pull out FLDigi for it, and I'll probably set up a computer on Mint or something like that, pull in FLDigi and such, and run it that way. I pulled it right off the repository for OpenSUSE, loaded it right up, no issues. It was ready to go. So I'm thinking to go that same route and hook it up for the school.
Well, you see, that's where OpenSUSE or SUSE dropped the ball right there before Novell went ahead and took them over. They cut out the ham radio library. It's one of the reasons I switched over to Debian. But apparently
they... You know what? Sorry, Richard.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, at Ohio Linux Fest this year, I talked to them about that exact thing. And they told me to look at, and I don't have it right in front of me, but they said, go looking in there. There is still a repository. I did find it in there, but it's not on the main list. I had to go in through the website to locate it.
Well, yeah, I know it's in there, and a couple of people have told me so. Unfortunately, in the time between the time I dropped SUSE and found out that it was still available, I got hooked on Debian-based stuff. So now it's like Debian, Ubuntu, Mint, that kind of stuff. In fact, that's one of the reasons I was wanting to run DSL on that laptop I was talking about earlier, is because it's my understanding I can use Debian packages to get what I need into it. You know, so is anybody else doing any kind of digital work or anything else interesting radio-related with your operating system?
Well, I've always been interested in remote operation, and I've had limited success, and I suspect it's simply a bandwidth issue. I've heard that running a secure shell server uses more bandwidth than, say, running a VNC server. I can't picture it, but I know people smarter than I have confirmed that. I have made a few contacts remotely and digital, and it's amazing the things you can do. I guess the next step when I get things back together again is to try to operate voice remotely. That might be a little bit harder thing to do, though.
Well, that's one of the things we've been kind of working towards. We got a question in one of the early episodes about running X11 forwarding for the purpose of running remote station and stuff. And I was standing on the porch today when I was trying to rack my brain for something to discuss, either on this show or the other. And I got to thinking about it. You know, you can do all that stuff with something like remote desktop. What a lot of the Windows folks don't even know what remote desktop is, because unless they've operated a version that's pro or higher, they haven't had any interaction with it. All they know is invite somebody into your system thing. So you've got the ability to do remote desktop through Linux. You've got the ability to do VNC through Linux. If you want to go the SSH route, you can do that too. So there's a handful of different ways that you can go about doing something like that. And that is something we need to address on the show at some point. I know I'm able to work on my wife's computer at the other end of the house from here using VNC. I try not to do it though, because she gets mad at me because I take her computer away from her. Anyway.
Well, how do you get the audio back and forth?
I'm sorry?
How do you get the audio back and forth?
When I'm trying to fix something that she's messed up, I really don't worry too much about the audio. I know in remote desktop I've got a pro machine down here that, is only still pro because at one point it was, set up for packet radio or, running, a WinLink node. When I remote desktop using it into her Windows machine, I get audio. I really haven't noticed whether I get audio or not on the other one.
Some of the remote access protocols transfer audio in the data stream. RDP is one of them. VNC, I don't recall. I haven't used VNC in a while. I don't recall if it passes audio or not. Well, Bill asked about RSID or RSID, and I read an interesting thing about that. I don't remember. It wasn't in QST because I don't get QST, but they were talking about doing that, and it was something that I saw in a chat or something about sending preambles before digital signals so that your software can automatically decode whether it's RIDI or PSK or Olivia or whatever. Sounds like an interesting thing, but I haven't seen it in practice. Anyone dealt with ARCID?
Yeah, I've seen it being used. It, of course, it depends on the person transmitting to actually have it enabled as well, but it'll automatically switch your software to the proper frequency in the waterfall and, of course, the proper mode as well.
Well, I need to check into that myself.
Yeah, it does work. It does work, and apparently the RSID protocol is often more robust than the actual mode used for transmitting.
Well, there's probably more information packed into the preamble than there is in some of the early, you know, like RIDI is not exactly a complicated protocol.
Right. Well, yeah, but then you've got something like Olivia, which I've got a pretty good ear. I've been doing digital a long time, and I can follow a signal further down into the noise by ear than anybody I know. And I've heard Olivia go completely away in the noise, and it was still getting good, solid print. So you can't sell some of them short, though, Russ.
No, I'm not selling anything short. I know when I was experimenting with PSK31 the other day that there were some signals that barely showed up in the waterfall. I mean, they were basically a couple of little blips in the blue, and I was still getting perfect copy on them. So, you know, like I say, I haven't tried anything more. I haven't tried the Hellschreibers or the Olivias or anything like that. But even just straight PSK31 was being picked up even just barely above the noise floor.
Well, there you go. And I mean, you know, all this stuff is relative. You know, it's like packet radio is horrible, horrible on HF. And I'm talking about full protocol AX25 station to station connect packet radio is horrible on HF. It takes forever to complete a QSO, a transmission, whatever you're doing. But on the other hand, it is great on 2 meter FM. One of the reasons being that it was designed for 2 meter FM. That's where it was designed. That's where it was primarily supposed to be used. And that's one of those cases where we took a protocol, moved it off the frequencies it was designed for. And yes, it did work. It was helpful when we were running worldwide packet networks. The problem is that there are, once again, better modes. And PackTor came along, took the best parts of packet and the best parts of AmTor and stuck them together. And yes, it's a real pain for a lot of folks, but let me tell you, you can't break down a PackTor connection on HF. You cannot stop it from getting through. So the only reason I went off on 2 meter packets, we had a question about it in the chat room. VHF or UHF FM packet radio, when you're using the full protocol, works absolutely fantastic. There ain't no chance of the packets getting lost like with that APRS crap.
Tell us how you really feel,
again,
Richard.
Didn't he?
Yeah. don't keep it in. You know, try to vent.
I try not to hold back. I try not to hold it back. So, have any of you guys tried Echolink or interested in that at all?
Actually, I was just talking with KCATAD there in the chat room. He's setting up a IRLP node there, his QTH. And we were talking about it because I was looking at Echolink. But he was going the IRLP route because it's Linux. You know, it can be run on Linux easy. And we weren't familiar with anything Echolink on Linux. Is that something we have to run through Wine, or is it actually somebody do it up for native?
Well, Echolink, I'm sorry, go ahead, Russ.
Oh.
Was you saying?
No, I was just probably going to say the same thing you're going to say, that Echolink is a Windows thing, but Echo Linux was something we talked about for that was written natively for Linux to do Echolink, but it's not as mature by far as Echolink itself. And I was also going to comment on IRLP because I mentioned in the last episode, and I'm actually going to set up an IRLP node myself. It's pretty inexpensive. And where I happen to live in Missouri, down here in Arkansas, there's a couple of IRLP nodes here close to me, and I can simplex into them and get on IRLP just fine. But up in Missouri, there are no IRLP nodes anywhere near me. So I figure if I want to get on IRLP, I'm going to have to set up my own, which is, you know, just fine. It's a pretty inexpensive thing to do, and as long as you've got some network bandwidth, it'll work for you. Personally, I'm a fan of IRLP. I mean, I just got on there. It works and does everything you need it to do, and you get great communication out of it. You know, hard to beat on, well, I mean, it's VHF and UHF FM, so, you know, it's going to be clean communication. But I like it a lot. Haven't played with Echo Link, however. Not yet, anyway.
And you know, IRLP, well, not IRLP, but Echo Link. Echo Link's one of those things that I'm iffy on. Along with other things. That's the problem with being a crotchety 20-year ham, is there are things that you just really... Now, IRLP, on the other hand, you can't get too upset about that, and really you can't get too upset about Echo Link, because they, for the most part, people can get on there and talk to each other on their computers and everything else, but the backbone of the whole thing is they use them to link repeaters, which... we've always done. We've linked digipeaters on packet. We've linked voice repeaters via telephone lines for as long as I can remember. IRLP and Echo Link, you know, they're just an extension of that. Plus the fact Echo Link has the benefit that you can set up stations so that folks can outlying areas can have some way to get into the network via VHF radio at somebody's house hooked into an internet feed. There's a lot of good applications available around it, ways to put it to work to be helpful. I don't feel about it the same way I do that other one I keep slamming, and I'm not going to say it this time. But also, you know, we're talking about applications. You got Echo Linux, Qtel, which is an older program also, and I believe it does work okay. I haven't used it in a long, long time. I don't know if there's been any advancement as far as the way it's set up. Echo Linux, I haven't really used. I did go ahead and fire up Echo Link under Wine on Ubuntu, and it does work. I think the problem I was having the day that I tested it, I was overdriving it because I was running it through the same deck I'm running through right now to talk to y'all. So as far as Echo Link is concerned, that's one of those things, it's going to take time for it to evolve and come along. We've talked about Echo Link, we've talked about digital a little bit. What other stuff in radio in general, guys, are y'all interested in? I mean, we don't have to hold it to computers, I don't guess. And, you know, this is a ham shack type program. I bet that big scary guy from Texas is listening, so he might come in here and answer some questions if he needs to.
For me, like I said, I'd be interested in CW eventually. Another thing I've heard is really interesting to get into is 6 meters.
Well, any of you other guys run any 6 meters?
I had one of the 6 meter MFJ sideband rigs got for Christmas 1 year. I haven't made a contact to them. I've heard people, but haven't been able to get out. So that's where the antenna comes in, and it's what I like messing with is the antennas. So just need to get one up for 6 to really work.
Well, there you go. That, you know, that's the biggest part of it, Paul, is having the right antenna. I've worked a very little 6 meters. I was trying to do some meteor scatter at one time and was semi-successful with that. This HF rig I've got will do 6. Really didn't spend a lot of time doing it and that kind of stuff. You know, it's all about catching it at the right time and anything. I mean, any of you other guys got more experience with it? I can't talk real eloquently about 6 meters at this point.
It always opens when I'm at work.
Well, you know, I was a big 10-meter fan, and I understand it's a lot like that. You know, I got a 10-10 number I haven't been able to use in 12 years.
have any of you talked on 440 centimeters?
440 megahertz, you mean? 70 centimeters?
I think so, yeah.
We have a couple of 70-centimeter repeaters around here that are linked to some 2-meter nodes that probably cover a good 100 or 150-mile area, but you can get into them on 2 meters as well as 440, so I pretty well think that no one uses the 440 side. I know there's a couple of 440 IRLP nodes here, and there's even a 220, I think, IRLP node somewhere. But 440 is not a real active band, at least not in this part of the country. I don't know about anywhere else.
Well, you know, you're kind of, you're supposed to be the traffic cop here, moderator.
Well, okay, Jim, what'd you say?
I was going to say, we're down here in Sacramento, we have a problem with one of the Air Force bases. They want us to turn down the 70-centimeter repeaters something like 30 decibels. So basically, we need to shut them off. So we can't do 70 centimeters here anymore.
And then Matt said something about 70 centimeter as well, I think.
Yeah, we have a link set up here. And we are working on setting up a 70 centimeter repeater for Aries. It's almost done. But, yeah, that's something we got going.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, here in Texas, every pair on 440 is filled. Every repeater pair is filled. Now, there's not a lot of activity on those repeaters, but every pair is filled. Everybody wants to be on 440, but nobody wants to talk on it. But, and there is plenty of 70-centimeter sideband out there to be had also. But I do understand the situation. I think Jim said out in California, the Air Force bases. Part of the problem with that is that we operate real close to each other. Every ham band's either inside or right next to a military band. And most of the repeaters out there in California up on mountains and stuff. So I sympathize and I feel for you, but I can kind of understand why. You know, you can kind of look at the coordination, the chart for the coordination for 440 here in this part of the world. And the closer you get to the Joint Reserve Base, Carswell, the fewer and fewer repeaters you see around that place. One of these days, I'm going to get out there and operate some of them. Of course, I've been operating some of them on my D-Star radio. well, I see you in there, Kent. I was going to try and get your voice going on in here, but it didn't happen. So let's do something for Kent, y'all. Have any of y'all... put any thought into dealing with any stuff that's kind of out there on the edge, the experimental stuff, you know, VLF experimenter stuff, or possibly meteor scatter, or been involved in any of these balloon launches and that kind of stuff? I mean, have y'all tried any of that kind of stuff?
Kent saying he heard the HARP test here 2 years ago.
For those of y'all who don't know, the HARP array is a giant radio transmitter up in Alaska, and they have a serious, serious antenna array up there, and they're able to focus these VLF signals, and the stories vary on what it's actually for. Some of them say it's an experimental station. Some say it's for communicating with submarines at sea and that kind of stuff. And then you got the weirdos like the one I was talking about, who I don't think we're even going to talk to about. But anyway,
it's the hotline to the little green men. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, well, not so much that, but this nut thinks it's something to create to do weather warfare and stuff. Anyway, or weather modification. Anyway, what is the guy's name?
It doesn't matter. He's obviously a crackpot.
Anyway, this show is not in that genre. if Richard wants a show in that genre, he will speak some Japanese. And then.
Yeah, this is not paranormal in the ham shack.
And then.
Conspiracy in the ham shack. Ooh.
And then he'll start a show about it. Episode 18.
Jim's still in here. I had to mute my mic for a minute so I could laugh.
Oh, I thought you were coughing up a bone over there.
No, I was laughing about Richard speaking Japanese again.
Oh, Japanese!
Now, yeah, I gotta admit, this is a hell of a lot more fun watching this show live than it is, you know, listening to the podcast is all great, but this is a lot more fun.
Well, we're doing wild tonight. It's like y'all are privy to a great happening, because there's not very many days that I don't have to do something for my back, take a muscle relaxer, a pain pill, anti-inflammatories, something. Russ is trying to play music over me, and I'm going to keep talking so it can't happen.
No, but can you hear the song?
I got your picture.
thoughts of us.
It took a minute. Get ready.
We have to wait for the payoff.
Y'all pay attention. Here we go.
No, they got one more verse to go, but it's a good song too, so we can just hang out and look at you from inside as well. You can be turning up and turning down, turning in, I'm turning right, I'm turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. Turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so. All right, there we go.
And actually, I forget.
The new theme song.
I really wasn't thinking about that particular song, but there's this guy that's a ventriloquist. His name's Jeff Dunham.
Oh, yeah. I like Jeff Dunham.
Y'all might have heard of him. And he's got this little purple puppet and the whole Japanese thing, something about lotion. Anyway.
Well, that's what the song's about.
Oh my God. Is Paul still in here? We really need to be careful if Paul's still in here. Paul, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, we're going to behave now.
Well, we never said the live broadcast was family friendly. Just the release is family friendly.
Yeah, y'all don't tell him about Chinese eyes.
Oh yeah, boy.
Russ, you got some Pete Townsend in there?
Pete Townsend, all the best cowboys have Chinese eyes. I can pull that. Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Oh, good God.
Off topic.
You know, we're going to get about 3 minutes of this in the release version.
I do have a question for Jim there. You're asking about a 2 meter Slim Jim, is that right?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Is this portable to take with you, or to have more up at your house or at work all the time, or something like that?
We've got them mounted on my house. Actually, I live in a stucco house, so I can't use the radio indoors. So I need to I need to get some kind of antenna.
I use a J-pole, topper J-pole I made up. Just took, one minute to make it up, and I used that for a good while, and shoot, even that, I was making packet contacts with the space station with it. Had a null when it came directly overhead, but other than that, I was able to make good contacts with it.
Are you talking about a copper cactus?
Basically, but without the added elements.
Come think of it, I had one of those made out of half-inch water pipe. That I ran over here for a long time. Packet, it was a fantastic packet antenna. And I did ping the space station a couple times. I couldn't get a good connect, but I did ping them a couple times. And it made an absolutely wonderful FM antenna. I had it up on a 30-foot pole, and I could talk all the way across the county on 50 watts. They could hear me. I'm in Balt Springs in the southeast corner of Dallas County. They could hear me direct at the EOC in Carrollton, which is in the northwest corner of Dallas County, and that's about 35 miles.
Yeah, they work pretty good.
Oh, yeah, they're great. That's a good thing about building your own antennas. There are plans out there all over the internet on how to build these things and pick up the parts at Lowe's.
I think that's part of the fun of amateur radio.
Exactly. And that's
you're able to do stuff like that.
That's one of the reasons I don't see why more amateur radios don't embrace Linux, because it's about Linux, man. It's the same thing. You take those computers and you put them together, and you take that Linux operating system and pick up one of the easier languages that are available to you, and program up what you need, build the applications you need to use, modify the applications you use and want better. That's the whole thing. I still owe the guys over at HPR, or Russ and I owe them guys a ham radio and or Linux and the ham radio philosophy episode. We need to get around to that. And I'm sorry, I I brought everybody down. It was starting to sound like a Linux Crank episode in here before the J-Pole thing started. Y'all go ahead.
That's nothing like a good conversation about antennas to bring everybody down. That's right.
Well, Richard goes serious when he talks about radio. That's why y'all, sometimes y'all send me an email over at the other show like, Richard, what's wrong? You sounded so down. What's going on with that? Richard just gets serious when he talks about his radio. We're serious about our radios down here in Texas.
Oh, speaking of radio, I want to mention this. KD8HWG in the chat room there. He just got the VX8R. Did an opening of it the other day. Haven't had a chance to see it yet. He's actually in my neck of the woods.
He should probably see a doctor about that.
Time for some Red Bull.
Well, all joking aside, the VX8R is actually a really cool looking handy talkie. I'd like to have one of those myself.
Check it out. You know, I wasn't really a fan of Vertex and Yaesu radios until I bought a VX150. That little bad boy is built like a tank. So I bet that one y'all are talking about is probably pretty solid, too.
Yeah. Speaking of solid, I just bought a Yaesu FT250R handy talkie. It's only a 2 meter, but it was $99. I mean, hell. Brand new. And the thing's going to...
Well, this 150 over here, I bought it for $109.
The thing's got a battery. It looks like it'll last about 3 weeks too, and that's on transmitting on high. I mean, the thing's mostly battery.
These HTX 202s y'all have heard me talk about in so many places. You know, I've carried them for years and years and years, and I always went and bought a 12-volt battery pack for them. And you could do heavy usage for almost 24 hours with one of those 12-volt battery packs. It was just keep on chugging. I could take one, turn it on, and set it on the counter and leave it on an active repeater, and it would run for over a week if I didn't key it up. If this one y'all are talking about's got a big battery pack like that, then, you know, that's half the battle right there. Stay away from lithium ion batteries, though, y'all.
Now, the FT250 has a nickel metal battery, nickel metal hydride, and It's still pretty small form factor for a radio, but when you take the battery off of it, you're pulling the whole back of the radio off.
FT60 was like that. FT50, FT, one of them, FT50 or 60.
Probably the 50, because I imagine the 250 is a newer version of the 50.
You guys got any more questions, thoughts, suggestions? Anything else? Nothing that has anything to do with the Orient.
Oh man.
Well, you just blew everybody's day, so
Oh, man, that was my suggestion.
See Russ been over there looking.
Alright, enough of that.
We would like to thank all of you guys. Well, I would. I don't know about Russ.
Well, I'm going to thank all of these guys individually. We'll start with Kent, whose cell phone died on him, and he had to disappear on us. But that's okay. We'll say Kent was here. It looks like Jim just quit on us as well.
Jim's still here.
So it was Paul that quit on us. Oh, well. So Paul, thanks to Paul. Thanks to Jim, N3JIM. Thanks to Matt, KC8BEW. And thanks to this KB5JBV guy, whoever he is.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's you. Oh, okay. But anyway, thanks for joining us tonight. It was fun, probably more fun than we should probably have without drugs and alcohol. But
I don't know about you guys, but I already started.
Maybe I'm JA5JB.
Oh, so that's what was going on. But anyway.
JA5J. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that's good for this. Boy, I'm not looking forward to the edited version of this thing, I'll tell you that.
This is going to be a blast.
Well, it's going to be a blast for everybody to listen to once I get through it. Yeah, I'm sure. Thanks to everybody who's in the chat room. Let's give the quick rundown of who's left in there. We've got K6FPV. We've got Bill, K9WKA, KC2TPY, KC8TAD, KD5VQD, KD8HWG, Kent's still in there. Jim's still in there. Matt's still in there. Paul's still in there. And two unidentified Ustreamers. So we've been going like gangbusters tonight.
And the Ustream bot's been in here listening to us the whole time. So we may not even have an account next time we come in here. But that's okay. We have a secret account we can record under if we have to. Oh, my God. This is more.
Nothing.
I was fixing to say something bad. This is more fun than shooting guns in the house. All righty. Yes, he does. And Richard is an imperfect creature, one of his imperfect creations. He's going to have to either cut me some slack or cook my butt. Either way, I don't know. Sorry, I was answering a comment in the chat room. Yeah. Somebody giggling.
I can hear that giggle from here. I know it's Matt.
Who's giggling? Don't make me come over there.
He lives in Ohio. You don't want to bother.
He's the kind of guy that throws away his rollover minutes.
Don't use that company.
Oh, God. Don't get started on cell phone companies. Come on. Just wrap it up.
Oh, man. Yeah. Going downhill path.
Yep. Yep. We're off the rails in the ditch, and the caboose is on fire. So let's just wrap this up.
Fire. We would like to thank you all for coming to visit us on Linux in the Ham Shack. Linux in the Ham Shack.
All right, I'm muting you guys.
Linux in the Ham Shack is a production of Black Sparrow Media. Black Sparrow Media.
Black Sparrow Media is not responsible for the content of this podcast.
Closing episode number 25, take 3.
All right, I'm going on mute. We'll
Russ, you know what you got to do.
Oh, I got to hit the little button, do I? Here,
no,
let me.
No, I was thinking of play.
Yeah, that's the button. Here we go. I'll put your picture. I'd like a million of them around myself.
When it's in the Ham Shack, the video.
Okay. All right, everyone, breathe.
Thank God for mute buttons.
Oh, my belly. Linux in the Ham Shack has been a production of the Children's Television Workshop. Brought to
you. And Russ, I'm glad you had it.
Yep.
Oh, damn.
You needed a medic at the end of the last episode. It looks like you need one this time, too.
I needed oxygen at the end of the last one. Now it's ribs. I'm going to have to go take my pain medicine, too. Oh, good Lord.
All right.
So Russ was finished thanking everybody. And if we can get Matt to quit giggling, and that is Matt giggling, isn't it?
Yeah, but I've hit the mute button on some of that, too.
Up, there he goes again. All right. Kind of dignified now.
Got me going enough. I'm coughing now.
Oh, well, I understand. I have a chicken bone that's trying to work its way up also. He must have muted it again. Take 153.2. like I said, we want to make sure everybody in the chat room knows that we appreciated them being here. Everybody that was here with us live. We've had a really great show this time around. We've had a lot of fun. Hopefully we didn't offend anybody. But like I said before, if you have any hate mail, please send that to k5tux@blacksparrowmedia.com. But if you have praise and good words and flowers and gift certificates and firstborn children, whatever, you can send those to KB5JBV@blacksparrowmedia.com. You can catch me on Identica, Twitter, Facebook. I'm just all over the place. Or you can post in the forums. We don't have a lot of activity there, it seems, but we always, always get the feedback out of there. So how can these folks get a hold of you other than hate mail, Russ?
Well, other than hate mail, you can send me chocolates and champagne or something. I'll send the mailing address if you're interested. K5TUX@blacksparrowmedia.com is where you can send email. I am also on MySpace and Identica and Facebook and Twitter and all that. You can use J.R. Woodman to find me on those places. You can give us a call at 888-455-0305 if you want to leave a voice comment, and we'll put your comment on the air unless you tell us not to. You can leave a comment on the webpage, blacksparrowmedia.com/LHS or LHSinfo.org, whichever one you feel like typing. Oh, and don't forget to throw a donation in the donation can on the website if you have a couple of bucks lying around. We're doing pretty well on getting towards Dayton Hamvention so far. We have until February 1st to make our money so we can show everybody how good and how fun Linux in the Ham Shack is. And everybody who was here tonight knows exactly how fun it is. That's all I've got. Back to you.
And I think Russ has pretty much covered it. And one thing we did forget to mention, y'all make sure if you want to have as much fun as we've had tonight, make sure you go over to the LHS website at lhsinfo.org, lhsinfo.org, and check out the schedule. And then come see us at Ustream TV when we're having one of these extravaganzas. And you can also sign up, follow us on Twitter and that kind of stuff. And we send out notifications that we're going to have a show that night. So with all that said, and no more bad words from Richard, and no more shaking the heads from Russ, and no more accusations of heavy drug use, this is Richard down in Balls Springs, Texas. I'll see y'all next time.